Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA as well as their fabulous Summer Writers Conference at pnwa.org. Well, I met our guest today, novelist, first-time novelist, Shilpa Agarwal, when I was doing a reading down in Los Angeles. And I met her only briefly, but I thought she was quite interesting, and I was eager to get her on the show. But honestly, I haven't really had a chance to get to know her. And so instead of my normal lengthy introduction, I thought it'd be best just to get her on the show, and you and I, listeners, can get to know her together. Doesn't that sound like a fabulous idea? I thought so. Shilpa, welcome to Author to Author.
Hi, Bill. It's great to be here.
Well, it's good to have you on. Like I said, we're just sort of getting to know you, so let's begin by, you published Haunting Bombay. When did that come out?
It came out in April of 2009.
That's okay. So that came out. That was your debut novel, and before that, you had been working for a bit in academia. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you were working in academia, and then you left. You left to have children, to give birth to a number of things. A live human being, and your first book.
That's right. I was at a kind of juncture point in my life, working on my doctorate, which was in comparative literature, which was an 8-year program. And I had finished 6 years. I had just finished my oral exams, earned my CPhil degree. And I thought I could write this dissertation for the next 2 years, and the ideas in it could be read by 5 people, my committee, or
right.
I could take these same ideas and these same things that are very, very important to me and write a novel. And so that's what I decided to do.
Oh, interesting. But that must have been that's quite a moment, because, of course, you've invested a lot of time and a lot of energy into an academic life. And
that's right.
And an academic sort of relationship with ideas and with the world, and now this is a total departure. Although I will tell you that I've never met a writer, and by that I mean a creative writer, who whether doing creative nonfiction or memoir or fiction or poetry or whatever, I've never met one who basically it was only a question of when they were going to write, not if. In other words, that idea was simmering in them for a long time. And
mm-hmm.
Maybe they dove into it when they were 9 or 10 or 11, or maybe they needed to wait until they had a career going. Was that true for you also?
You know, when I was on the academic path and teaching and working, I didn't really think of making my life as a writer. What I did see, though, in academia was I didn't see any role models back at that time at that point in my life of women who had children and were tenured and were happy. And so I didn't see myself fitting into that world. So I felt very uncomfortable even as I wanted to make this my life. And it wasn't until after my oral exam, that I had this moment of what, and during my exam, to my co-chairs, they argued about what I should be writing about. And I kept thinking, wait, I should be writing about what I want to be writing, not what they want me to be writing. And then that was kind of the moment, the defining moment of, well, maybe I can, maybe I will.
That is a great moment. And it's so important that our listeners hear that, because there are writers who can do it, and I've interviewed a couple of them. But 95% of writers must begin from that place, that question of what do I want to write? What is of interest to me? Because they're not going to be, those, your advisors, those chairs, weren't going to be the ones sitting at the computer having to come up with the next word and the next word and the next word.
Right.
That would be you. And if you're not interested, each of those words are going to be much more challenging than if you are interested.
That's right. That's right. And I felt like the final PhD degree, because I'd already earned my MA in CPhil, was like this carrot. And I thought, but, you know, is it really the end point or is it the journey there? And so I decided it was all about the journey of, you know, all about the journey and not about that carrot at the end. And I don't regret my decision ever. I've never regretted it.
You know, you mentioned that you didn't have an example of a woman who was tenured and who had children and who was happy. And I think that, you know, I have two boys and they definitely take a lot of energy for both my wife and me. And I think it's no small thing to understand that whether you're a woman or a man, I think it's still particularly more challenging for women to have to balance all that, that it's energy. And it's not just time, but it's actual mental creative energy too. Because how old are your kids now?
My daughters are 12 and 9.
Okay. And so you know that relationship with them requires a sort of creative thought in terms of always being present, always paying attention, always thinking outside of the box you were in the day before.
Absolutely. And that's why when I was working, when they were little and when they were babies, I would wake up at 4:30 in the morning and I would write
wow.
until they woke up. And that was the only time of the day when I, after I'd slept and, you know, would get up and I was refreshed and I had to myself. Everyone else was asleep. The house was quiet. And the rest of the day, you know, when your children are little, it's all about diapers and feeding.
Yes.
And it's not, it's endless.
My God, so you're up at 4:30. See, you know, I remember still when my boys were young, and just how it was like an endurance test, you know, because my guys didn't sleep so well, so there was a lot of getting up, and so there was the constant maintenance plus the physical fatigue of having to of your sleep. But you were getting up to write at 4:30. Holy smokes, were you clear headed? Did you feel pretty good at that time of day?
I think that I came straight from my dream world, and I also feel that it recharged me in some way. I felt like if there was nothing else that I accomplished in the day besides changing dirty diapers, I had put some words on the page, and that gave me intense fulfillment, because it was difficult going from being this like career woman teaching at these top universities to being full-time mother. And,
Mom. But I will tell you this, and I believe this wholeheartedly, that I think it's great to commit to your kids, and it's great to give them all the time you can, but if you want to be a great parent to your kid, you do something you love, because if you think you teach by anything but your example, you're nuts, and if you want to and you want them to do something they love, and if they see you doing something you love, they know what it means and they know how valuable it is. I am not in for anyone sacrificing their whole lives just to raise their kids. I don't buy it. Not for a minute. Unless raising kids.
Right. Amen to that. Amen to that. And I have to tell you, you know, in India, there's, you know, you have the ideal Indian woman who is a self-sacrificing mother and
right.
wife. And so I kind of grew up with that model.
Yeah.
And so it took work to change my own expectations and to be the person I wanted to be.
Right, because so this is interesting. I don't know what's happened in my life recently, but within the last 2 years or so, I've either befriended or have sat down and had great interviews with women writers born in India. I think there's like four or five. In my whole life, I'd never met that particular category. All of a sudden, so many. And whenever we've talked, one thing that comes up invariably is that a version of what you just described, like many Eastern countries, whether it's China or Japan or India, there's a real traditional conservative strain still through the society, and of course maybe even 30, 40 years ago it was that much more intense, that these women in particular have to come out from under now that they're in the West. Not out from under, but there's a clash of those two worldviews. And that's consumed part of your academic life and now your creative life. We're not consumed, but that's been a focus of it.
Absolutely. I think it's been, it's there. There, you know, like a voice in the back of your head about, you know, are your children taken care of? Are your husbands taken care of? Is your house clean? Check, check,
right.
check. Okay,
right.
Now you can write. You know, and so that was the priority always, and my writing always took second fiddle, and that's why it took so long to write the first book.
Right.
And, you know, and also in terms of writing about things that, you know, my grandmother would not want me to be writing about, you know, so it's, it's also giving myself permission to write what is being called forth from me to write.
Yes.
Without editing it.
And was your, not editing it as you go. Right.
Not editing it by these voices that say you can't write about sexuality or what do you,
right.
you know, all these things.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you, that's the one thing, the one reason a lot of times, not always at all, I mean, and Flannery O'Connor is a classic example of this, but one of the reasons a lot of artists and writers have to leave organized religions, they don't have to, but they often do, is for that very reason, that there is a sense that there's so many things that are off, that are taboo. And the writer can't have a taboo. You can't. Everything has to be on the table. You don't have to write it, but it has to be there. It has to be allowed, I think.
That's
I don't
right.
think there's either way to do it, honestly.
And you have to allow yourself to do it. You have to just say, I don't care what anyone else thinks. This is what is coming out of me.
Right.
And I will not be afraid of what comes back out of this. I think that was a big step for me in my first book, to just say, you know, I won't be afraid of what comes back.
Well, you can't be, and you never know what it's going to be. And did you have, was your mother a sort of traditional Indian mom? Was she like a good Indian mom, just totally there for you guys and sacrificing?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, that's
she was there after school, right. made her, you know, milk and cookies and whatever
oh,
else
boy.
She had. Always, she, you know, she was always there.
And of course,
she
as a kid,
clean.
It's nice to have that, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, you remember, like, oh, she's always there for me, you
that's
know?
Right.
And so as a woman, though, now you've got to be willing to say, yeah, that was great, and there's another version that can be just as valuable.
Or even better, because
yeah.
this is what fulfills me. And I think that it's hard for women when they raise their kids, and their kids are their whole lives. It's hard when the kids grow up and go to college, because then there is this void, and,
that's right.
You know, so I think that it's important to cultivate the other thing that is inside you as well.
Also, the kid will know if you are there, if you are sort of using them to find a purpose in life, and they will resent it eventually, because they don't want
right,
to be your
exactly.
purpose. It's too
yeah.
much. It's too much pressure.
That's right. And they are so much a part of my writing world. When I was writing Haunting Mombay, I had my little blueberry iMac, and they would tape up little notes and drawings on it. And so that was their way of connecting with me. And now that they're older, you know, if I have a block or, you know, recently I was just kind of finalizing the title for my second book, and I put all the options on the fridge, and they participate in that kind of discussion of what they like and what they don't like. And so they're involved in that, and they see, and they've come on book tour with me up to a couple places, and so they see that, and they're very proud of me.
That's awesome. That's great. And
yeah.
Now this is interesting day, this day that we're actually recording this, you've just finished your second book. Yes, this is it.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. It's a very auspicious
wow.
day, because I came to this place today where I was like, okay, it's done. Meaning, of course, there's going to be revisions once I had
right.
to give it to my agent and once it goes to the editor and all that stuff. But when I was in the last stages of writing, I have a million post notes of all these little things that have to be corrected or tweaked
right.
or things that don't make sense, and they cover my desk. And I just picked up that last post-it note today,
wow.
and I was like, wow. That's it. This is the last one. So it was an incredible feeling. You know how it is. It's
oh, I do. That's just an awesome feeling. You can't. It's a weird thing, because there's no such thing as a book being really done, is there? You
right.
sort of just abandon. It's like, this is the best I can do. This is. But it's not like a chair that you've gotten from IKEA, that when it's done, you know, there's nothing else to be done. But it is a great feeling when you've understood that you've really gone the journey as far as you can. go.
That's right. And
I'm curious, having written Haunting Bombay, and it's your first novel, and you got it published, so you not only wrote the thing, which was brand new experience, because writing fiction is not like writing academic work at all. I don't think.
No, it's not.
And then you had it read by... Did you have this experience that almost every first-time novelist I've talked to has had this experience, that you write it, and then you discover to your own amazement that perfect strangers actually bought it and read it?
I know that... Absolutely. There is.
Isn't it weird?
I remember when the first person called me, a friend, that she'd gotten the book. I guess before it was supposed to come out in bookstores, she got it from Amazon, which I didn't know at that time was possible.
Right.
And she said, so she basically held my printed book in her hand before I had a copy, and it was the strangest feeling. And it was just amazing to kind of have that moment where your ideas are manifest in the form of a book.
Well, not only that, but you have to get used to the fact that these strangers will go into these bookstores still, while they exist. They will go into these bookstores, and they will see your book, and they will have to pick between it and, Alice Hoffman or John Irving or whoever, and they don't know you're just you. You're just... This person who wrote, no, that's just a book. And that suddenly you are on that shelf and you belong there and there's no difference. And I think it takes a while for the writer to catch up with the author self and
that's
understand
right.
that that's where they are now.
That's right. And then writing the second book is such a different experience entirely.
And how was that different? How was that different?
I never questioned that I would write the first book. It just took a really long time, I call it my third baby because it took about 9.5 years from start to publication.
Wow.
But what was different with this book is just that I knew how to hold the whole story in my head. I didn't question things. I didn't let my academic self kind of hang over me and question the ideas. I really surrendered to the process of writing. I surrendered to the story. I completely trusted in that the right things that I would need would come to me, and they did. I had experiences of going to the library to pick up a book I put on hold, and there would be another book there that I don't remember putting on hold, and it had the material I needed. I had experiences where I would just be like taking a break because I couldn't figure something out, and I'm doing some yoga on the ground, and my eye would just catch a book in my own bookshelf, and I'd be like, "Oh, well, this," and I'd pull it out, and it would have what I needed. And so I just really lost myself in the magic of that process, and I didn't question anything this time. I didn't question that I had to take out something. I didn't question if the story was pushing me in a direction that was completely unexpected, which it did over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And in fact, I started this story in this second book in 1960, which is when my first book is set, and basically backed it up, 200 plus years, and started it there. And each time I was backing it up, I was like, why is it pushing me? Why is it pushing me? And then finally it pushed me to this point in time in 1804 where it starts. And so I didn't question any of that. And it really, the process, it flowed out of me in a very just ebullient way.
Yeah, that is a fantastic story. And I'm so glad you shared that, because I think that writing a book is a relationship. We may not think of it that way because it's just us, but it's not. It's really a relationship. And the thing you're having a relationship with, I think, now you can call it the muse, but it's kind of a hackneyed word now. It doesn't mean much to anyone. But in a way, that's what it is. That part of you that surprises you, that part of you that gives you information that you don't understand but you learn to trust. And I think it's so important as a creative person to learn what it means to listen to that, and that if you ignore that, you are cutting yourself off from perhaps your most valuable resource.
Absolutely. And I think that you can't rush it. You can't push at it. You can't say, oh, please, give me another I don't want that character to die. Please give me something else. You know, that character has to die for some reason, and you may not know it the moment that you're writing it, but, you know, sure enough, you will realize it as the story goes on.
That's right.
And so I just Marvel kind of had all these different elements that came into my story because I don't write in a linear way. I write, you know, something comes to me here.
Oh, you're one of those. You're all over the place. Oh, wow. So you just, okay. And you don't outline either?
No, I don't outline.
Okay.
No, not at all.
And you don't write linearly. Whoa.
No.
That's an unusual combo. I know people who outline kind of, but then will pick what they want to work on that day because they got the whole thing outlined. But usually non-outliners, which is still the majority of fiction writers, write linearly. All right, so you don't do that. So just, but do you have a sense when a scene comes to you, do you have a sense of where it's going to fit in the story?
I just have a sense I need to write something, and then I write it, and I don't know right away if it what it connects to or how it connects or what part of the story it will be part of. So this I kind of think about it as like seeing a stage with a curtain, and you see if you know maybe one or two actors on stage, and then as you capture that on the paper, the screen opens and you realize there's another layer, and then another curtain opens and you realize there's another layer. So then all of these, the context of these actors on the stage, then all of a sudden you see the background, you see what's happening behind
right.
it, you see how they connect, and so that's it's kind of that process. It's kind of the patient undraping of the story.
Wow, that is so cool. You know, Shilpa, it looks like we have a caller who would like to ask a question. I think I know
okay.
who he is, but we're going to get him on here and we're going to find out.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
I'm good, Jeffries. Do you have a question for Shilpa?
Well, I generally ask Bill's guests. He honors me by letting me come on and ask about the process. But, Bill, wonderful job. Stole my thunder. Great answer, Shilpa.
Thank you.
A statement, if I can, and your novel is so beautifully written, and to me it was so visually engaging and allegorical, and I loved how your character was first introduced as only the girl, which pulled me into her world before I really knew her first, and I love the allegory, the stub of her sixth toe, such glorious allegory, and I'm really looking forward to your next novel.
Thank you so much. That is so kind of you, and it makes me feel so happy in my heart when I hear people who have been taken or captivated by my story. It means a lot. So thank you for calling in.
Most welcome, Bill. Thank you for taking it. Well, allow me to make this statement. Have a great day.
Oh, no problem. Thank you, Jeffrey. See? Oh, your beloved Shilpa.
Oh, that was so great.
Wasn't it? And really, it's a beautifully written book. Obviously, the 9.5 years were well spent, but I think I will tell you, I'd be willing to lay money, based on what you described to me, that this next one will be even better. Because I think there's nothing, no matter how hard you work and how good you are and how careful you are, there's nothing like learning to hone that relationship with your intuition to let the stuff really crack.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am very, very excited about this book. It's the maturing of a writer, and we all go through that process.
But you're really discovering about yourself. See, I think it's a journey into yourself. I mean, it's great to write another beautiful book and get to share it, but I feel like every day that I learn something about writing, I've learned something about myself in some form or another.
Absolutely. It is. I mean, everything that comes is something that, you know, psychically, is something that you're kind of grappling with in your mind or on some deep level, and we're not these just beings that are disconnected from the rest of the world. I mean, my second book actually deals with this idea of how we are connected to the generations that come before us and after us, and it's not just biology and culture and those kind of things that we inherit, but there are these unsought inheritances, these things that we don't even realize that come, that are part of our life, that are cycling from some other life, from some other ancestor.
Yeah, you know, and one of the challenges about people, I think about the academic life, and it doesn't intend to do this, but there is a habit, and one of the reasons I got out of I left college, I think, was that there is a habit to view the world purely rationally, regardless of where you reside whether you're in the sciences or the liberal arts. There is a leaning towards the highly rational, and there is, I think, a limit to what rational thought will get you, because certainly creatively, something works because it works, because it has its own rationality to it. A story has its own set of rules that can't be taught.
That's
and you
right.
have to learn to trust that. You could, I mean, if you had used, I mean, there's nothing rational about how that information came to you about the book. It just, you have to learn to trust that it will. And the
That's
mind,
right.
the intellectual mind, can't accept that, probably.
That's right. I think it is. It's unexplainable. It is totally unexplainable. And there's so little that we know as human beings. I really feel that way. And we put ourselves into these little boxes and try to view life, but there's such hugeness behind and over and around us that I think is unbelievable.
Well, think about it this way, Shilpa. This is where the novelist is a great gift, I think, is particularly intimate art form. But the novel often involves, in some way or another, getting into different characters' thoughts and feelings. Sometimes we bounce around. Sometimes it's told from one person, but often we can bounce around and learn about different perspectives. And that in our lives, we see the world only through our own perspective. You know, we don't have the novelist's perspective, but in reality, every life we're surrounded by is as full as ours, and it's impossible for us to know the vast history of every single soul we come into contact with. And we can't ever, it's impossible for us to know us. That's the whole that is beyond our perception. It will always be beyond our perception. And we have to learn to trust that there is an integrity to all those lives that we're surrounded by, all the billions of them.
I feel like when I'm writing, that's kind of my hope, that it's about opening your heart to these characters, to their viewpoint, their weaknesses, their strengths, and really allowing yourself to fall into this world and to understand how another person lives upon this earth.
Yeah.
And I think that builds, that gives us more compassion as human beings.
Yes, I've always felt that a writer's best tool is compassion, that you can never be too compassionate, both as a person, as a parent, as a lover, as a friend, as a boss, whatever, but certainly as a writer, that you want to be compassionate towards your characters and just the world. Just the world. Judge not.
That's right. Amen to that.
You know, but I really do feel that that the more compassionate you can be toward, because every character thinks they're the hero of is the hero of their own story, whether they're hero or not.
That's right. I mean, in Haunting Bombay, the Aunt Savitri is not a likable character, but I hope that I was able to bring across that her weakness, you know, the loss of her child, her husband, you know, drinking and leaving her to go to the drinking dens. You know, you see where she's coming from. You see where her vulnerability is. Doesn't mean you have to like her, but you understand her.
Yes, absolutely. Well, what an excellent note to end our show on. Shilpa, thank you so much for coming on. This was delightful.
Thank you so much, Bill. I really appreciate it.
Yes, I'm so glad I got to know you, and I'm sure our listeners are as well. Good luck with the next book. Perhaps we'll get to chat again when it comes out.
Yes, that would be great.
All right, thanks a lot. Well, everybody, wasn't that great? Didn't you like Shilpa? I did. Next week, be sure to join us again. I can't remember off the top of my head who's going to be on the show, but it's going to be somebody fabulous. Don't you know that? In the meantime, do only what you love. Write only what you love. And you really, well, you just really can't go wrong, can you, if you do that? Until then, I'll talk to you.